soaked people out there. Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us. You know, I'll often say a nice day in the city. Well, it's not. It's raining, but we need the rain. It's dry. The plants and the trees need nourishment. Think of it that way as you listen to us here on the Arts Magazine Show. Right here on KKFI, of course, 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. There is a lot to cover going on. We've had a bit of a break, but theater is going full swing on many different fronts, and we try our best to cover all of it. Well, we can't cover all of it. We cover as much as we can in different areas. And we are going to start out today by journeying over to UMKC, where the prestigious, nationally known, well, world known, someone told me, UMKC Theater Department has begun and is underway with some of the shows they have going on. This is separate from the Kansas City Repertory Theater. In fact, many of the actors trained at UMKC appear on professional stages around the world. Someone once said to me that on any given night, a graduate of the UMKC Theater Department may be appearing on stage somewhere in the world. And here to tell us all about it, two of the people involved very much with theater over at UMKC, Megan Sandberg Zakian.
Zakian.
I try my best. Okay. Zakian is with us. She is the director of one of the shows about to start over at UMKC, the Caucasian Chalk Circle. That opens, according to the notes I have, in just a few days, the 17th. Are you all ready for that to open?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Almost.
Almost. Well, things need a little tuning oftentimes.
Or as a line in the play says, immediately.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
Immediately, if not sooner. I've heard that term used as well. Also with us, Stephanie Roberts. She is I should have asked Megan. I will later. She's an actress, director. She is the associate professor of physical theater at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, UMKC Theater Department. Welcome to the show as well. She's an expert on Commedia dell'arte, I believe.
Yes,
thanks. We discussed that, as well as probably several, many other things as well. Recently was on stage in Our Town at the Kansas City Repertory Theater as well. Welcome, ladies, to the show. Megan, do you act as well as direct and things like
absolutely
that?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. You don't direct at all? You don't act at all?
No, not since seventh grade.
Not since seventh grade. So it was always geared more towards directing?
There are lots of stories in my family about bossing my little brother and cousins around in the living room. But as I said, not since seventh grade. I actually realized that I was in a play in high school that I think Stephanie saw. So that might have been a little bit of a lie. But no, I quickly realized that my talents were not in that direction. It's always it's a joy to get to see the full picture too. That's really what I love.
Yeah, you are the artistic associate at the Central Square Theater in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So, how did you get from there to here, as the term goes? How did that happen? Do you know people? Do you know lots of people?
I know one very important person who happens to be sitting right next to me. Steph invited me last year to come here and direct Big Love by Charles Mee, which was awesome, and I had such a great time and working with the students. And so I had the opportunity to return, and here I am.
Okay, Stephanie, what did you see in her that you wanted her for this particular show?
Last year, when we decided to do Big Love, Megan had just contacted me a little while earlier, so she was in the forefront of my mind. She had finished this TCG grantee. She was a TCG grant, a Theater Communications Group grantee, and she was finishing that kind of residency at a theater in Boston, and we were looking for a young, exciting director to direct this very visceral show in Big Love. Also in for Caucasian Chalk Circle, I think Brecht is something that Megan has been fascinated with, that is in her background. Do you want to talk a little bit about your connection to Brecht?
Sure. I've always I've always been excited by Brecht and somewhat perplexed and mystified by Brecht as well, which is always something that makes me want to, you know, spend a bit of time figuring out the puzzles of the play, the puzzles of the playwright, and in Brecht's case, the theorist, because, you know, there aren't too many playwrights out there who are just as well known for their plays as for their theories of the theater, and so those of us who are a little bit theater geeks or academic dorks in some way have you know, either love or hate Brecht mostly, I think. And I happen to fall into the love camp. I can probably attribute that to my father, who is a playwright and a theater scholar, and has always made me really excited about Brecht. And the thing that, I mean, you know, we know a lot of the popular impression of Brecht, if such a sentence isn't oxymoronic, but, you know, if one has an impression of Brecht, one might think kind of a cold, clinical, intellectual exposure of the mechanics of the theater, you know, take away the emotion and replace it with rational thought, and you know, the against mid-century naturalism, no more kitchen sink dramas or whatever. And while, you know, some of that is true, I think for me, and this my dad really planted this seed in my head, I think I was, gosh, maybe 10 or 9 years old when I saw A Good Person of Szechuan, which he directed when I was a kid. But that actually the beauty of Brecht, the elusive potential beauty of Brecht, is the marriage of a thinking person's theater with a really moving human experience. So, you know, Brecht has said, I'm paraphrasing, but something to the effect of, you know, I don't want the audience to sit back and say, oh, what a pity. I want people to lean forward and say, it shouldn't be so. And, you know, sort of a more active active spectator.
So you want the audience being interactive when they go away, not just enjoy the experience, but be, I don't know, be motivated to do something.
Yeah, I think that's right. Moved to action. And don't worry, I don't mean action as in, like, audience participation. It's not that. Don't be scared.
That works sometimes.
But, it's, yes. Nothing against audience participation, but that's not this. Yeah, I mean, another thing that Brecht said was, you know, how many times have I seen people weep at the poverty on stage and then step over the homeless on their way to their carriage leaving the theater? So I think that's really, it's the, you know, he wrote about class, he wrote about contemporary problems of the way that our society is structured. And this particular translation of the play actually really, I think, contextualizes that well. The play has a prologue that in the original German is a little bit impenetrable now, but it's been reframed really nicely in a way that is exactly in the spirit of Brecht. That's really about how, well, it's actually about how we use land, specifically about people being able to care for the things that matter to them, and it's also about how we rebuild after disasters. Mm-hmm. The actors have talked a lot as we've been working on it about how the framing of the play reminds them of a post-Katrina type of situation, something that seems post-apocalyptic, but actually that we've seen in our country in our lifetime, and how those disasters are terrible, but they also give us an opportunity to think about what is important to us about how we structure our communities. And that's really what Brecht was writing about. He was writing during World War II, writing the play during World War II.
Yeah, well, those things were in the forefront of his mind, obviously.
Yeah.
While that was going on.
As a German playwright, obviously, too.
Well, irony's there. You know, can't be overlooked, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, is that the reason UMKC picked the play today?
Yeah, I mean, well, of course, we want our actors and designers to have a diversity of training and experience. And one thing that Theodore Sweats, our acting chair, always talks about when he talks about particular movements or playwrights is what makes this playwright this playwright. So what makes Shakespeare Shakespeare? What makes Wilder Wilder or Pinter Pinter? And and so I think, listening to Megan and her what did you, theater geekness or whatever?
right. I couldn't think of a better person to really lead the students in delving into what makes Brecht Brecht and trying to find that together, trying to find what that style is, what that relationship to the audience is. It also builds on the work that I do with them in Mask. I mean, they really have a 3-year progression in Mask, from Neutral Mask to Red Nose Clown, Commedia dell'arte, and we like to think of every role that they take on as a mask in a way, that they're really inhabiting the other with their full body. And this is a great example of that, the Brechtian style that we're discovering.
Yeah. Well, we all wear a mask in some form or another.
That's right.
Some more than others, I suppose. Did you experiment very much with it? Are you of the mind that you didn't want to change a thing and not change any overall story sense? But there's little details that directors will often do to put their own mark on things, I suppose.
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting about doing a classic play like this that's written in another language is that there are so many translations. So even just the process of searching for and identifying a translation was definitely a choice about what type of production we are going to have. The language is, I think, a little more contemporary. It feels a little more fluid, a little less formal than some of the more academic translations. And I really like that. It's a recent British translation by a guy named Alistair Beaton. And it's great. It's really great. So that was really the first thing the biggest choice, I think, that I made. And then really just the beauty of getting to be here at UMKC with the really talented designers doing the great MFA design program is to create the world and the concept together, collaboratively, as we go. So, you know, it was important to me to find what makes Brecht Brecht for this moment, you know, for 2015. Wait, what year is it? 2014. I'm a little bit ahead of myself.
You're so focused on the plan. We can overlook these minor details.
It's funny because we have been talking about it being in the sort of immediate future, not the exact present. But anyway, what, you know, for Kansas City in this moment, what makes this play, what will make this play resonate most vividly? And so I wouldn't say that I had a specific vision of what that would be, but I knew it was important to find the vocabulary that made it feel essential, vital, necessary at this moment, because that's what Brecht cared about. He cared about a theater for our time. He kept saying over and over, how do we make a theater for our time?
And it opens up this Friday the 17th over at UMKC. Which space will you be in? Will you be upstairs in the big theater? Will you be downstairs? Will you be in Grant Hall? There's any number of places you could be.
Yeah, we're in the Spencer Theater, which is really great and beautiful. So I'm excited about that.
It's a big room.
It is, although we've made it a little more intimate for this production, so I'm also excited about that.
Did they change the configuration from when you were in our town? That was interesting.
Yes, it's very different from what it was like in our town. So a little more traditional, but again, as she said, more intimate.
Yeah, I know. There's two shows virtually going on at the same time. One of the undergrad productions, A Midsummer Night's Dream, is going on right now, I believe.
Right. It is in previews, and it opens officially on Wednesday. There is an industry night tonight, and that's directed by Scott Stackhouse. That's with our wonderful undergraduate students in Grant Hall, and that is also more intimate. I believe the audience is sitting on the stage, on the proscenium, and so we have a kind of a jungle gym of a. If you go on our website, you know, you can see the actors are climbing all around. It's going to be really fun.
Okay, it's kind of you have a lot of shows going on over there. If I can try to summarize a lot, I don't know that I can. You may have to step in. But there's graduate school productions, there's undergraduate school productions, and some of them also work in some of the rep productions as well along the way.
Right, as well as co-productions with theaters really all over town.
That's true.
We have, well, we started off the season, as you mentioned, with a co-production with Our Town, with The Rep. I and six other actors were involved in that. We have Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo, and that's coming up at the Unicorn. And Theodore Sweats, our acting chair, is going to play the tiger that haunts Baghdad, as well as a couple of three of our students and a design team. We have these are just the co-productions, mind you.
Sure.
Next semester at the Unicorn, we have Lasso of Truth.
That's Wonder Woman, isn't it?
Yes. The inventor of Wonder Woman is also the inventor of the lie detector. So you get to... Yeah,
that
the Lasso of Truth. Get it?
Yeah, those who aren't familiar with the comics or the movies or the TV show,
right.
Whenever someone wouldn't talk, she could put her Lasso of Truth around them, and they would immediately spill all their guts about everything.
Right. Yeah.
Don't we wish we had that today?
Yeah.
I often wish I could have that
or not.
To some of the guests. I often wish I could have that to some of the guests here. We could get to the bottom of things a lot faster. But that's going to be with the Unicorn as well.
Yeah, and that's going to be great. Faculty member Carla Nowak and Vanessa Severo is going to be in that, as well as students, design team, actors. And then at the Coterie, we continue our annual co-production with them with The Miraculous Journey of Edwin Tulane, which is based on the children's book about a little China rabbit that goes on adventures all over the place. So that will be our third-year actors and a design team as well. As well as, all of our
graduate production. Now,
graduate
Caucasian Chalk Circle is a graduate production, so you have those MFA program students.
I do.
Yeah.
Yes, they're wonderful. We also have one terrific undergrad in the production as well.
Well, what an experience for them to work with these people that were specifically chosen from around the country. Ted was here, our Theodore, was here one time, and he explained how they look at people from around the country, can only pick a certain number of people.
That's right. We have about 8 students per graduate class, so they get a lot of pretty intense, rigorous training, one-on-one training. Yeah.
Oh, I'll bet so. So you're working with these people, and is it a cut above what you would normally work with? Not to knock anything in Cambridge. That is where Harvard is.
I mean, I think the real special thing for me about getting to work with these students is the combination of the acting conservatory and the design students. I've worked with wonderful acting students and wonderful design students and also wonderful actors in many places, but it's a really great synergy between the two that's here, and that's exciting because, you know, they actually know each other very well. They collaborate really nicely. It's great to see, you know, you in the real world you don't ever have an actor and a costume designer, like, you know, having a long conversation over a beer about the concept for their character and, you know, what they see them wearing. And I mean, I guess it could go terribly wrong, but so far I think it's really great to see the conversations and collaborations crossing lines, I guess, that they normally don't in professional productions, which is really cool.
Yeah, well, it makes a big difference, I know, sometimes. Let's concentrate on some of the graduate shows. There are Caucasian Chalk Circle is the first one I had listed, but there are 3 others also.
Right.
One during the year.
Right. Next, we have Pericles by Shakespeare, and we have another exciting guest director, Joshua Brody, coming in, and that's one of Shakespeare's real adventurous romps. There's many, many shipwrecks, there's pirates, there's a brothel, there's, you know, magic, and
so great.
yeah, so that's going to be really fun. Next semester we have The Liar, which is a French farce by Corneille, written in the 1600s. However, this is an adaptation, it's a translation and a kind of adaptation by David Ives, who a lot of people are familiar with, Venus and Fur, which was done by the Unicorn recently. So this is done all in verse, and that is directed by Theodore Sweats, and that's going to be a lot of fun. And then finally we have Freedom Rider, which is directed by our visiting faculty, Ricardo Kahn. It's a world premiere, and it's very exciting in that there are 4 playwrights that are involved in this one, including Kansas City resident playwright Nathan Jackson. And so this is about the 1960s freedom riders. It focuses on four young people who really, you know, risk their lives, you know, for these fundamental rights for all during this time.
Yeah, I have that listed May 1st through May 10th.
That is right.
Flyer April 24th through May 3rd. Pericles December 5th through the 14th. That'd be going on at the same time as Christmas Carol over there. So there'd be lots of fun interaction for the people over there at UMKC as well. I don't want to underdo the undergrad shows. We're talking about Midsummer Night's Dream, and then the one I particularly wanted to ask about, the Rocky Horror Show.
Yes.
February 27th.
Yes.
That will be a lot of fun.
Yes, we are very, very excited about that. And not only that we're doing Rocky Horror Show, but that Stephen Eubanks is coming in as a guest director from EGADS Theater, and we're very excited about that. Most people are familiar with Rocky Horror Show. It comes from each semester, the undergrads in their co-lab class, they focus on one on either a playwright, a theme, a movement, and so this semester it's the American musical, and so we followed up the next semester with a production that involves those that background, the history that they've just studied. So
if it's a Stephen Eubank directed show, there won't be a moment on stage when someone isn't moving around. he has people on the move often.
Yeah, yeah.
It's usually, well, it used to be a hard and fast rule: no movement while someone else is delivering their line. And that was drilled into me many years ago. That's not the case anymore, at least not in a show like this.
Well, it really depends on the piece and the director.
Yeah.
No hard and fast rules.
Undergrad shows, graduate shows, and then people being recruited, I guess, is that the right word, from around the country to be
right.
In the MFA program.
That's right. We'll start that in end of January. And also, besides just the official season that we have and that we advertise, we have a lot of other things going on, like our undergrad intensives that happen in collaboration with Heidi Van and the Fish Tank. And we just finished Death by Shakespeare, which she directed and conceived of, which was all of our undergrad students. We have another one, you know, next semester that will have to do with the American musical. We have little very bare bones productions in one of our studios, 105. I'm doing a playwriting project with the undergrads that will be featuring an original play that was written by an alum. And so we have a lot of things going on at any moment.
Yeah, sounds
yeah.
like it. All kinds of interesting things going on in the department, as well as the current play going on, Midsummer Night's Dream, and the show about to take the boards this Friday over at UMKC, the Caucasian Chalk Walk. We're talking about that. We have the director here, and Megan is directing that. And as time gets close, are you to the point of refining things? Surely they all are properly motivated by this time. I would think so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we just finished our tech weekend, so we're in the position of having seen all of the many tech elements, the lights, the sound, the set, the costumes, and now trying to put them all together smoothly and dynamically. There's a lot of moving parts in this show. I mean, I think one actor said the other day in the midst of, you know, trying to figure out a scene change, "Well, I'm sorry, I got confused. I am playing 10 characters in this show." So it's, you know, there's we have a lot to do, and this is the most exciting time. I love this week, especially when the actors are really juggling all the technical elements. There's only live music in the show. All the sound effects are created live on stage. We have a wonderful composer, Nihan Yesiel, who's creating original music and sound score with the actors. The actors are doing projections, they're moving the scenery, they're making crazy props out of brooms and buckets, and, you know, so it's a really, it's an exciting and very demanding experience.
That really is a rounded learning experience, if they're involved in all that, even the props as well.
Yeah.
That's... that's a lot for them to do. But it, I guess it serves them well as they go on. Because all the graduates won't be actors on stage. Some of them will be stage managers. Some of them will serve other purposes as well if they go on into a career in professional theater.
Sure, sure. Some of them go on to be, you know, behind scenes, or rather to self-produce, I would say. You know, most of our actors, it is a professional acting training program, and so we, you know, we train actors that really want a professional acting career, but knowing from experience, a lot of times to do the work, you make the work. And sometimes that means that you are building your own props and running your own lights. And, you know, so I know from experience that it's wonderful for them to be so close to the designers and the technology students, as Megan mentioned, but also to be hands-on part of it in the show.
So is there a separate, confusing the issue, I suppose, is there a separate degree for, say, dramaturgy or a
yes.
separate degree?
Yes. Well, the MFA, the MFAs include stage managers, technical directors, designers, and actors, and then we have a an MA degree, which is for dramaturgs. And the dramaturgs also are part of the teams when we do co-productions and are often hired on, you know, at the Unicorn and other places.
Well, you keep them busy, that's
we
for
do.
Sure. It's
we
not,
do.
It's not like some schools where they do two or three shows a year and that's it. They're just essentially two going on right now.
That's right.
Yeah, and people are preparing as well. You've been here a couple of times in Kansas City now, well, maybe more. I know of two. What's the theater scene here as compared to, say, the Boston-Cambridge area?
Oh, the theater scene here is really great. I mean, I've been incredibly impressed. I haven't gotten a chance to see as much as I'd like or meet as many people as I'd like to, but Steph has given me a bit of the tour, and it's really impressive. I mean, the collaboration, just listening to you guys talk about the collaboration between the UMKC Theater Department and the various theaters, the collaborations between theaters themselves or theaters and museums and theaters and museums and academic institutions. I mean, it's really special. I would say we do have a very collaborative scene in Boston as well, and it's something that I love about my home community, but I don't think that's the case everywhere, and I certainly enjoy working in places where it feels like there's just a lot of joy and pleasure and support around telling stories and making art together.
Okay, well, thank you, both of you, for being with us to inform us of all the goings-on over at UMKC. Caucasian Chalk Circle opens this Friday, the 17th, over at UMKC. It's in the big room, the Spencer Theater, and the number to call for more information, the Central Ticket Office, I assume that's the same one, 816-235-6222, or online at umkc.org, a listing of the grad shows, the undergrad shows, the collaborative shows, and the rep shows as well. All there. Thank you so much for being with us. Megan Sandberg, Zakian?
Zakian. So close.
I apologize. She is the director of the show, and Stephanie Roberts, associate professor of physical theater, as well as an actress and a director as well. Thank you so much for being with us as well. We're going to take our break. When we return, we're going to go out to the tall grass of Kansas and talk about theater out there. Yes, they do it. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. A great cast can cover up a lot of a movie's flaws, and The Judge has plenty of flaws to cover. Thank goodness Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall are on board to do the covering. In this courtroom thriller slash dysfunctional family drama, Downey plays a jerky defense lawyer who returns to his small Midwestern hometown to defend his father, a respected jurist who's been accused of murder. It's overlong, the plot is predictable, and it's got way too many irrelevant subplots. But it's also got two terrific performances from Downey and Duvall, and that's just enough to give the judge a positive verdict. The Notebook is a Hungarian World War II story that will never be confused with a Nicholas Sparks novel. This ultra-bleak drama tells the tale of twin 13-year-old boys whose parents send them off to live with their witch-like grandmother during the duration of the war. They spend the time hardening themselves so that the many horrors they witness won't destroy them. Sadly, the story seems stilted and exploitive in execution. In the dramatic thriller Kill the Messenger, Jeremy Renner stars in the story of a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist whose life and career went into a tailspin after he wrote a story alleging the CIA was involved in starting the crack epidemic. The involving story plays on our paranoia about government secrecy, but this somewhat frustrating movie raises a lot more questions than it answers. Also opening this week, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day is a Disney family comedy based on the popular book. Pride is a British drama about the 1984 mine workers' strike. Dracula Untold is a horror action entry. The Guest is a dark suspense thriller starring Dan Stevens from Downton Abbey. Mia Wasikowska stars in Tracks, the true story of a woman who made a 2,000-mile trek across the Australian desert. And finally, Addicted is a drama thriller based on the novel by Zane. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM. Freeze Frame!
The head Apollo is about to return. Saint Sophia is going to be born again. The Buddha is in the park. Siddhartha sleeps, but is going to awaken. The time you have waited for has come.
Wednesday, late night at 11:30.
And welcome back. Oh, that sounds spooky. Welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. We're going to journey down to, I guess, Paola, Kansas, the Paola Gardner area of Kansas, and speak with the Tall Grass Theater Company, where they are producing and putting on The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. You know the story. Ichabod Crane, Headless Horseman, all of that. This, I guess, would be a children's-type production with us to tell us all about it. And I brag all the time. I go to the top. You know, I like talking to interns. I like talking to actors and all of that. But this is the president. So we go right to the top. The president. The president of the Tall Grass Theater Company, Dr. Michael Brummett, is with us. He's a retired research psychologist living in Olathe. After many years as a university professor, I guess he got the theater bug, and has worked in recent years as well with private and government organizations undergoing stressful changes. But you have come to the right place, sir.
I've got that impression.
Yeah, that's right. Who wouldn't? Just sitting in the lobby out here. I bet you got the theater bug at some point. I guess your daughter brought you into it. So here you are.
Okay. Well, yeah, I did theater back when I was in college, but then I did community theater in Toledo, Ohio, and I really enjoyed it, but I always had that feeling that I had to do something else with my life. That maybe it was, I hate to say it, a little more financially positive.
No one would disagree with
right.
you. No one at all.
But anyway, I kind of put it to rest for many years after I was doing, You Can't Take It With You and those kinds of plays back with the Toledo Repertory Theater. And got away from it. It's worked for about 25 years.
I would say you were not bitten completely by that bug. You probably kind of avoided a direct bite from the theater bug.
Yeah. It was a little nip in the ear, I guess.
Because everyone knows, of course, once you're thoroughly bitten by that theater bug, there is no cure. You just have to learn to live with it.
Well, the problem is it's happened to me late in life.
That takes up all of your time.
Yeah. I can thank my daughter for bringing whatever that bug is into the house, because that's happened.
There is no cure. You just have to learn to live with it. So you went on, and now you're president of the board. This often happens, you know.
Yeah, you go to sleep one night, and you wake up the next day, and there you are.
That's right. Well, the Tall Grass Theater Company, I guess based for the most part in Paola, at the Paola Community Center?
Well, our history takes us all the way to Gardner. As far as our initial productions were done there, we formed the company about 4 years ago. When I say we, it's really Sandy Miller is the grand dame of the Tallgrass Theater. Uh-huh. And she's currently executive director, and as she often says, this is her child, and she treats it very well. And she's been fortunate in that there have been a number of folks that have gotten together with her and worked with her over the past number of years to actually form a company. And that's one of the things we wanted to do was we're trying to establish a company in the true sense of the word, with all the components of what's necessary to run a theater. Community theater is very different than your previous guests. They're the major league. We're, you know, the kids in the neighborhood getting the Sandlot game together. That's what we're doing. And sure. I think we're doing a pretty good job of it. And we've done some good things. But our goals are somewhat different, I think, in that we're called the Tallgrass Theater Company, and it's considered a community theater, and the emphasis would be on the word community, because we spend probably as much time working on trying to develop a sense of community among the participants as we do actually the production side of things.
Do people get excited when it comes showtime? Big turnout at auditions, for instance?
Yeah, and it's been great because we've had a good mix of folks that have been with us since the beginning, and people that have had experience in other theater. A number of folks have been involved with, like, Theater in the Park and Starlight, places like that. And they come and they've joined us for some productions and have helped us in developing the company. And then we get local talent also, and we're constantly looking for that mix of about one-third people that are deeply involved in the company, and about two-thirds of people that just are from the community, since it is a community theater.
Yeah. The show that is about to open this Friday the 17th, the time is closing for you, Michael. The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. It's Ichabod Crane, the Headless Horseman, and all that goes along with that. This particular adaptation written from some other original works.
Well, Washington Irving did the original. And you mentioned in the beginning about it being a children's show, but I would say not particularly. Most of our productions, we try to design them in such a way that you can bring your four-year-old along, or if you've got your grandparents with you, you can bring them too, and they can have a good theater experience. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that. We've done shows like Leaving Iowa, which has comedy that I think is appropriate for a 4 or 5 year old to enjoy, but at the same time, there's enough nuances in it that older folks get to appreciate it too. And I think Sleepy Hollow is the same way. It's not really a children's production, but children would certainly enjoy it.
Yeah, the productions are October the 17th, Friday at 7 o'clock p.m., October the 18th, Saturday at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Paola Community Center in Paola. This one's in the Community Center in Paola?
Right. The Paola Community Center, it's an interesting facility, and it's worth a trip even if you're not into theater directly, because it's... If you're into history at all, that whole area of Paola has a lot of history associated with the Civil War and with just the early development of the rural culture of eastern Kansas. Paola, Osawatomie, Fontana, there's a number of small communities down there which provide just a great weekend opportunity for you to take a trip down there and visit these small towns. There's a number of wineries down there that offer winery tours. There's a number of sites related to the Civil War's early struggle, the John Brown era. There's John Brown's home is down there, one of his homes.
Was he involved in any of the battles there?
Yeah, well, the Battle of Osawatomie was actually... These predate the Civil War, technically, if you look at the Civil War. I'm from the East, so the Civil War began in 1861. But in reality, it began much earlier than that, the free and slave state struggle that occurred.
There were disagreements long before the formalities took place.
Yeah. And the Battle of Osawatomie, it was a small conflict, but it had major implications, because that's where the fervor and the split between the states really became solidified, was during the struggle with John Brown. And
yeah, people drive down to Paola to see the play. Can they also take in some of these sites as well?
It would be a wonderful weekend experience. There's a number of wineries down there, bed and breakfasts, which are down there. So you could go down there on a Friday night, and there's some good restaurants, and then see a play. And then if you want to do a little history the next day, you could do that.
Yeah, is it kind of a community effort? Do you integrate with the other things going on down there as well?
Well, that's
a well-rounded experience.
Yeah, we're organizing with other some of the wineries down there and groups that the community center is really the focus. They are making great efforts there. To Chad Myers is the director of the community center. Now, the facility, I mentioned that briefly, it's the was the Ursuline Convent of Paola, and it's a campus. It's a 30-acre campus down there that they had, and it consisted of a convent school, academy, and it has beautiful grounds. There's a grotto there, and the interesting thing is the theater building itself was actually the dormitory building for the convent school. And one of the things which you can learn in traveling down there is how the community developed, and that theater began as sort of the first cultural step. A community would, when a community developed, the first thing you'd do is you'd have a general store, then you'd probably have a livery stable or a gas station now, a post office, and then the school would open up, and then the school teacher would want to bring a little culture to the community, and so they would start community theater. In this case, the Ursuline nuns down in Paola, they have a beautiful building, which was a combination of their dormitory and then also a 300-person theater building down there. And we were doing, the tall grass was sort of living out of the back of several trucks going from one location to another.
This is not unusual.
I know it is.
Theater groups are very nomadic.
Right. And we did that throughout the Gardner area for the first 2 years. And then the opportunity to see and then actually begin to develop as a home the Paola site developed about a year and a half ago. And it's been great for us because after many of our productions, as other companies will tell you, you know, we'd have to do the takedown of the sets. And I remember one production, it was during one of our snowstorms, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're dividing the scenery between a storage shed, somebody's garage, and a funeral home. So that was what we had to do. Where now we have a place where we can have everything stored, and it's in one location, and it really helps our situation.
Yeah, having a permanent home really helps, doesn't it?
It really does. It gives you that sense of identity. It allows you to focus on what you want. And then when you tell people who you are, being able to point to a physical plant, which in this case is at that site on East Wea Street, 905 East Wea in Paola. Paola is small enough that if you just ask where the community center is, anybody will tell you, but it's on East Wea.
Okay.
And anyway, that is now home.
Yeah, now let's help them with the directions just a little bit here. Say we're in Midtown Kansas City, speaking to you right now. At the corner of 39th and Main, right in the heart of Westport, a little bit to the side. Pretty much in the heart of Westport. Now, how would people from the immediate metro area, what would be the best way for them to get down there? Does I-35 take them down?
Well, it's 169, which okay, 169. Is where you want to go, just towards Spring Hill, and then down through.
So does Metcalf turn into 169?
No,
that's
the
not the one?
The best way would be to. I'm trying to think of it. There's a couple of approaches you could take, but going through Olathe, through central Olathe, and then the road heads directly south down towards Spring Hill.
Okay.
And you can get there off 35 and then make a left turn once you get to Gardner. And I believe that's Route 69 in Gardner.
Okay.
But the best thing is to just go ahead and Google Paola. You'll find it's directly south. And
give me the address again, then, if you're going to Google things.
Okay. The address is 905 East Wea.
Okay. How do we spell that?
W-E-A.
Okay.
And it's Paola, P-A-O-L-A,
okay.
Kansas, 66071.
That's how you get to, how do you get there from here, they always say?
Yeah.
That's how you get to there.
Right, that would be the best way. I mean, I could give some directions, but if you get to the center of town and then look for Wea, Wea is one of the four streets that are on the square. It has a very traditional square on it. And you just go east on Wea to 905.
Yeah.
You'll run into it. It's a large campus. You can't miss it. But if I gave you the left and the right turns, it would not work.
We're speaking with Dr. Michael Brummett. He is the president of the Tallgrass Theater Company, and he is currently here to tell us about, I've kind of meandered away from topic, the legend of Sleepy Hollow. And some people are familiar with the poem, and some people might not be. Some of them might want a little brush up on, well, what's that story about? I can say Headless Horseman and all that, but if they have no focus, tell us a little bit about the storyline.
Yeah, it's a Washington Irving story. It's been done many times, and for good or bad, it's now part of a TV series that's regular.
Well, they have to make it more spooky.
They've done that effectively. We're often told when someone tries to place us on some sort of, is it comic, is it scary, whatever, is to look at the Walt Disney version, cartoon version, and that's sort of where we started from. And then we moved a little bit to the spooky side from there. But it's definitely family-oriented, but it has enough, it has enough in it to make adults interested in what's going on. But it's a story about a school teacher, and it fits in with the kind of theater that we do in Tallgrass, in that it has that we stress early American, very traditional kinds of themes, and certainly Washington Irving fits in that. It's a small town north of New York, and it's about a school teacher that gets spooked by what he thinks is a ghost, and I won't say any more than that, but most people are somewhat familiar with the
technical
story.
People would say, how are they doing that headless, but don't answer that.
Yeah, we won't get into
how
that.
How are they doing the headless guy?
Yeah, we don't want to talk about that, but it is done.
I'll bet so.
But it's the 17th and...
I have the 17th and 18th at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Olathe Community Center. I'll give you two websites you can go to, and you must include the because there is another organization in this country called Tallgrass Theater Company.
Yeah, in Iowa.
The grass is all up in Des Moines as well. Yeah. This is the one in Paola. It's the tallgrasstheatercompany.com, and you have to have the on there. Or if you want information about how to get there, I suppose we gave some rough directions, but I suppose you could go to paolacommunitycenter.org and probably get some of the same information there as well.
Right. We're linked with them, and the phone number for the community center is 913-259-3650. That's 913-259-3650. And they not only deal with the Tallgrass Theater Company, they also have other events going on. They have a gospel concert coming on within the next couple of weeks. And we're trying to work with them to develop a package where someone that gets the bug to go to Paola and enjoy the restaurants and other things down there could also then take in a number of different kinds of events.
Yeah, you need some Civil War battle site or pre-Civil War. We consider that.
We'll call it Civil War.
Civil War battle sites down there, as well as restaurants and the theater as well. What other kinds of shows do you have coming up after your Halloween? I'm going to say it's my term. Halloween style production.
Funny you should ask.
Right. Yeah, this popped into my mind.
Yeah. All of our programs fit into that well-worn theme, which means that the titles you're going to know about. These are we try to deal with old classics and try to update them a little bit, but the goal here is to take and squeeze meaning out of old classics that people have seen before, but maybe not within the past few years, such as The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. We do have on December 5th and 6th The Homecoming, which is a talk about Americana. This is a classic Walton style, you know, Christmas on the farm kind of story.
That story was developed in the Walton family.
Yes, that's coming in December, and then we're doing a couple of more. During the summer, we tend to focus more on child themes in terms of younger participants. Beauty and the Beast, we've got that in July. And then Sleeping Beauty, we're going to be doing that also this coming summer. So it's on the Tallgrass Theater Company com. And then next Christmas, we're doing a radio play version of It's a Wonderful Life. So this is about as goopy American as you can get. But we found the thing that really got me into enjoying this sort of thing was a number of years ago, Charles Kuralt, who did the On the Road series for CBS, the last thing he did was where he looked at America and said, I want to get the real substance of America. And so he took one month of a year and went to 12 different places and stayed there for that full month and really tried to squeeze in the essence of what that community was and what it was like. And we kind of look at these stories like that even though some of them may appear to be, well, they've been done before and people know the story, we find that there's some messages in these that really, I think, resonate to people today.
Yeah. And well, Charles Kuralt covered a lot of ground in his career. He saw a lot of different aspects of America. It was different, but there were some common themes in with all of them.
Right. And that's what he looked for. He looked for what he called the essence of life, the meaning of life, because especially in today's world where everything is so fast-paced that there's still a need for family, for love, for caring for one another. And that's what the Tallgrass is really focused on, is developing a sense of community. We spend a lot of time together doing things really unrelated to theater. You know, we get together on New Year's Eve. We do all kinds of things that may not be typical of community theater, but we want to really make it a community experience. And so we encourage people. We do have our auditions coming up for the homecoming. That's going to be October 25th. And anyone that is interested in being involved in something in the Payola area, it is a bit of a drive, but I think if you do it once and look around, you may find that it's a drive worth doing. It's October 25th from 12 to 5. We'll be doing auditions for the homecoming.
And everybody wants to play the oldest son. Everybody wants to do that. But there's lots of parts. And so, wasn't the movie, what they call, referred to it as Spencer's Mountain rather than Walton's Mountain. What was the, in the books, what's the original? Is it the Spencer family or the Walton family?
It was the Walton family. I think Spencer Mountain is a different, it's the same genre, but it's a little...
That was changed around for the benefit of Spencer Tracy, probably. But The Legend of Sleepy Hollow opens this Friday, October 17th. At 7 o'clock p.m. Performance continues on the 18th at 7 o'clock p.m. at the theater at the Payola Community Center in Olathe, Kansas, 905 East Wee Street, Payola, Kansas. If you MapQuest, you need that, and you need the zip code 66071. More information can be had on their website at thetallgrasstheatercompany.com. And information about the Payola Community Center and those places in the Payola area that Michael talked about, PayolaCommunityTheater.org, Payola spelled P-A-O-L-A. The number to call at the Payola Community Center for information about tickets and that is 913-259-3650.
Right.
I take good notes, don't I?
Very good.
Thanks so much for being with us. Dr. Michael Brummett, he is the president of the theater company, a retired research psychologist and university professor, worked with government organizations undergoing stressful changes.
A lot more fun now.
I'll bet. That does not sound fun at all. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks.
The Jazz Insider is next. You know what that means. That means great jazz. KKFI has jazz from 1 to 3. Then they switch over to the blues. And Lady D will be with you from 3 to 6 playing the blues as well. So jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at the cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. Go Royals. We'll see you next time.